And Mike, what I'm going to do on this first call is just have the notes sent to you.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about some things. I was excited to get this opportunity to work with you because, as I mentioned to you a couple of times, you and I talked when we were up in Minneapolis a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and some of the same issues that you were getting after you back then are getting after you. Sound like they're still getting after you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to. I'm really glad we. It's just the two of us on here.
I may not be flexible, Rob, but I'm glad you're excited to try.
Well, I am. Let me ask you two questions, mm-hmm. and you're going to say, "What the heck does this have to do with Supernova?" But I just think it will help me and maybe you have a little insight on what how you approach Supernova. Here's the first question.
Okay.
If you did $500,000 a year gross for the rest of your career, would you be okay financially?
Good question. I suppose, yeah, yep.
Well, you know your expenses, and you got kids to educate still.
I'm on the tail end of that.
Yeah, I know what that feels like. We used to count tuition years.
Yeah. it would be tight. It would be tighter. I certainly have a little bit of luxury now, doing things I like to do, that would that allow me some flexibility. So I guess I haven't put a number to it, but I suppose it would be, yeah.
Well, I just pulled out the 500. I could have said 600 or 700, but I just wanted a number significantly below what you're doing now. Here's the reason I ask you that question, Mike. And I'm not suggesting you do 500. I want you to do more, but more production, not more work. Is that if you said to me, Rob, I got huge debts, I got four homes, I got a boat on the lake and kids to educate, this would probably be a tougher task for you. When you are in comfortable financial shape as you are now, you can take more risks. Rob Knapp taught me that you can never negotiate until you're prepared to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the mindset that, you know what, if I try Supernova, if I implement Supernova and my business gets cut in half, I'm going to still be okay. Because what we're talking about here, Mike, is a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
The trade-off is, the trade-off is how much do you want to work versus how much do you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it not a trade-off is Supernova.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can work less and do the same amount of business, then you're in a pretty strong position to make some of these changes that you just haven't had the time to do in the past.
Yeah.
Or, whatever. So that's the answer that I thought you would give me.
Okay.
And frankly, that's one of the reasons that Rob Knapp and I, this is fun for us, is because,
mm-hmm.
Who knows what's going to happen, but neither one of us need the work. We do it because we like to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it easier to pick up the phone and have these conversations when it's something we really enjoy versus something we have to do. Do you see the difference?
Right.
Okay. And here's the next question. How important is it to you what people think about you?
Well, I'd like to say it doesn't, but I'd like to say it doesn't, Rob, but in the end, I take pride in the work that I do and the practice that I have and the service that we provide, and so I do value a good reputation.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, quite a bit.
Okay. And that's a good answer. You want to deliver quality to your clients, and you want to do a good job for them.
Mm-hmm.
Pride is not a sometimes is not an attractive quality.
Mm-hmm.
You've been around people in your life who are really prideful and they're not much fun to be around. You're talking about having pride of workmanship, doing a good job. That's different. So here's what I would ask you to think about as we start in this process. The hardest part, and my experiences with you in person and over the phone over the last couple of years when we've talked, you come across as a gentleman and someone who is a genuinely nice person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the way you come across to me. I don't know, it's a small sample, but I'm comfortable with that. And what many times happens with someone like you, successful, it wants to take pride in the work that they do,
mm-hmm.
Is that they have trouble reducing the size of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, I've had this, I'm making this up, obviously. I've had this $100,000 relationship for 15 years. What are they going to do without me? What will they think about me?
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it hard to significantly reduce the size of the practice. And I'm sure you've fallen into that, I don't want to call it a trap, but you've fallen into that before.
Well, totally.
I know I don't, if this person transferred out, I wouldn't care. But it would be awfully hard to fire them from my practice. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay. So just keep that in mind, that if you implement Supernova,
mm-hmm.
which will simplify your life, will give you increased focus on your practice, and will enable you to do more business, let's say it's a miserable failure and you run off half your business, which you won't, it'll grow, you still are going to be okay financially, right?
Right.
And if you implement Supernova, and in that process you have to reassign some people for whom you've been involved with for a while, that's going to give you more opportunity to provide leadership to your very best clients.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would just kind of keep that in your mind as we go through this, I think it might be easier. There are times that FAs like you with the size of practice, I'm talking about number of households, they just become very reactive and they don't give their best clients the service that you want them to have. You've only got so much time in the day. Our belief is you spend it with the people who are your best clients. So, with that as a backdrop, let's just get started. I sent you something from Stephen Covey on the attachment. I sent you an email earlier today. Did you get that?
Yep. Yeah, I did. I glanced at it. I have
it
here.
Don't print it. Just look at it.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay. Now, as you look at that first page, and that's the only one I'm going to look at here, is you're familiar with Stephen Covey's work, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right. He's got four quadrants.
Yep.
And as you can see, everything above the horizontal line is important. Everything below is unimportant, and then everything on the right of the vertical line is urgent, excuse me, not urgent. Everything on the left-hand side is urgent. So that upper right-hand quadrant, you're working in urgent. It's important stuff, but it's urgent. You always feel like you know, something's getting ready to explode. You with me?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. As you look at those four quadrants, and you see underneath there, you see like results of working in the first quadrant is stress, burnout, crisis management, always putting out fires. You see those are under each of those areas. Where do you think you are most effective? In which quadrant are you most effective?
On page.
Just on that very first page.
First page, okay.
If which quadrant are you the most effective FA when you're working in that quadrant?
I suppose quadrant two.
Yes. Yeah. That's the proactive quadrant. And what I have sensed from our brief conversations is that I see characteristics of folks who work in the first quadrant. Stress, burnout. Didn't see burnout from you. I did see stress.
Mm-hmm.
Always putting out fires. You know, everything's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense that you work in that quadrant more than you want to?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Would you guess that you work more in one than two?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. What would you identify as the cause of you working in that left hand, upper left hand versus the upper right hand? What do you think is the cause?
Can't say no.
Can't say no to?
I just can't say no. I say that facetiously. I mean, I do say no, but I have a hard, I take, there's always, there's, it's, you know, I just, if there's a hole in, there's a hole in the calendar, I'll take the work or I'll do the work or I'll make the phone call or I'll make the follow-up or whatever it is. You know, there's always an exception. There's always a, okay, well, you know, this client needs to talk to you about this, and so I take whatever comes up versus sometimes making the proactive call to your $10 million account or a $5 million account and just spending time with that relationship. I can
Why?
All day
Why?
Long.
Why right? do you do that?
Because I can't say no.
It's because it's what you've always done.
Right.
That's how you and I, when did you start?
81.
Okay. Does that include the time at the bank?
No, 79 then at the bank.
Okay. I started in 71. And, Mike, that's what we were trained to do. Open a bunch of accounts and just everything will work out.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? Just right. Open up accounts and everything will be fine. And that's what you've always done. And then as your practice has grown and you've become successful, now you're trying to run a huge practice with the same thoughts that you were starting in the business. That makes no sense. Very few, you don't see many companies that are successful that are doing it the same way as when they were first started.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
All right. And that's what you're trying to do. But when you say you can't say no, that's big. That you work in that first quadrant more than you want to, and I had two answers. Now you've given me three. Number one, you can't say no. Number two is that's what you've always done, and number three is you have too many clients.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason you're in that first that upper left hand quadrant. So as we go into Supernova, I will tell you that. While you and I can, well, I will give you some things that you can use, ways to get referrals, ways to position different things. I can't make a meaningful, do what I really would like to do for you until you reduce the number of households.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you wear yourself out. You can't, you know, you're a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to fly with a pilot who hadn't slept in 36 hours?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what you're doing. You're not you know, pilots can only fly so many, commercial pilots can only fly so many hours a week or a month. I forget how they measure it. There's a reason for that. You can only fly so many passengers, Mike, until you, if you fly too many passengers, you end up in that first quadrant. So that's a long way to say, it's one thing to say, Mike, you need to reduce this, the size of your practice. It's another thing to kind of work through it how I've done here to hopefully make you see that this isn't about reducing the size of the practice. It's a byproduct. Mm-hmm. What this is about, Mike, is you creating the time to be proactive with your best clients and be able to decompress when you do the things that you enjoy doing. You got a lot of outside interests. They probably recharge your battery. So as you look at, I mean, as you think about that conversation, and you've gone through Supernova before, why were you not able to reduce the number of households the last time through?
We did actually, Rob, and that's what's maybe a little deceiving. I looked at my numbers again, and I don't know. I think the first runner go around with Supernova, we did. Okay, this is our rationale. I had kind of whittled down the primary. I was the primary FA on roughly 100. Households, and maybe 100 plus then 25 butlers. I have to look at the where we did it, but it was roughly 100 is kind of was my primary point of contact. And then another 100, basically what was supposed to be 100 or 150 went to Matt. So there was, then, you know, long story short then, what actually turned out, it was more like 300. So he had 200 and I had 100 is sort of how it netted out, give or take, you know, a few. But then now the number is 530, and what I figured out this morning in looking at that is there's roughly 330 is sort of the number that we got to in talking with Matt, give or take a little bit. And I was the primary point of contact on 100, so basically 100 is my focus, although I don't know that it's freed up any of my time, having said that, the business is up and we're doing more business. Matt's been doing more business, but either way, it was around 3:30, and then the firm then networked in a lot of non-networked mutual funds and simple plans and participant accounts, and so then all of a sudden my number ballooned to 5:30. So I think, so then what's the real number? Well, those simple plans probably represent maybe a dozen accounts, you know, where we have the relationship with the plan sponsor, but not all the participants. So anyway, but now, of course, from a regulatory standpoint, at some point we're going to have to do KYC on all those participant accounts. So that's down the road, or not down the road too far, but anyway, I think the real number, I don't know what the real number is, but it's around 330. So we did make, we probably cut a few hundred accounts out, but now we dumped in 200 more.
Just because you didn't bring in 200 more, it's just how the firm classified them.
Yeah, all these non-networked mutual fund accounts that were not on they're not showing up on our system, but they're about a dozen simple plans, mostly. There's probably some other accounts out there too. They're just mutual funds that are networked, are not held. They're held away at the firm, at the fund companies.
Yep.
They don't show up on the UBS system, but now they do.
Okay.
We didn't. So we were servicing the plan sponsor, but not all the participants.
Are those plan sponsors meaningful relationships to you as individuals?
Well, most of them fall into probably the not category.
Okay, if you offloaded, and again, I'm not telling you to do it.
Yep.
I'm just trying to get a handle here. If you offloaded all your simple plans, how much production would that cost you, Mike?
I don't know.
Is that a number that you could put Verna on or someone to dig that out for you?
Yeah, we could find it out.
Okay. So I'll send you a summary of what we've talked about here today. But one of the things I'm going to ask you to do is ID the production that you're getting from simple accounts. Okay.
Yeah, we should do that. My guess, it's probably abysmally low.
It is.
But,
probably is. Now, do you have some of these? Okay, I don't want to go there. Okay, all right. So, what are you all going to do this year, Mike? Production? Just give me a rough idea.
I think I sent that number to you.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me look here. You may have given it.
T12 is 2.3.
Okay. Assets?
362, I think.
All right. How many prospects do you have?
Very few.
You said very few?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You don't need any. We got some other things that we can do before that.
That's kind of the dilemma.
Right. Let me go to what you – I'm going to shuffle some papers here. I want to get the – you sent me an email on the 19th, and last night I sent you – I said the numbers don't add.
Yeah.
And do you have that – what you said is your top 50 or 71% of your revenue, and then you said your next – you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Give me a second. Where did I get – that number from, let's see here. So do those numbers add up to close to that number? Let's see, 271 plus 250. So that's around 520. So that's close. So
here's the question I'm talking about. You said your top 50 would give you $1.2 million.
Okay.
You're going to do 2.3.
Okay.
And then you said your next 50 give you another 22%.
Okay.
Which takes you up to 93%. Mm-hmm. Where you threw me is your next 50 give you 13%, and now we're way above 100%.
Oh. Okay.
It's an email you sent to me on September the 19th.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Oh, yeah, those don't add up.
That'd be a good trick if you. It's kind of like government accounting.
That's a good program.
Here's the email I sent you last night. Is if the 71 and the 22 are right, and the 2.5 at the bottom is right, you don't need to do a whole lot of work because if you can get 93% of your business from 50 households, the question becomes, Mike. And I'm not talking about taking a meat axe to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If Matt and I kept 100 households, and that's 93% of our business, is that a good business decision?
Yeah.
I'm not asking an answer. I just want you to confirm you understand the magnitude of the question.
Yeah.
So if you think about it. If you're going to do 2.4, and you go down to 100, let's see, 2.4 times you'd be giving up 7% of your business. That means you'd be giving up $168,000 to get down to 100 households.
As a team, you mean?
Yes, as a team. Because I think, see, this isn't about we want to have 200 households. You know, all our metrics are done on 100. This is about how can we create the time for you to have a life and spend more time with your best clients. So let me just give you a thought process. If you said, I'm going to focus on our top 50, I am being the primary contact on the top 50. And then Matt had primary contact for, say, the next 75.
Mm-hmm.
That would be 125 clients and be north of 93% of your business. And if, as you know, the farther you go, further you go down on this list, I mean, the top person in the next 50 is significantly more than the bottom person in the top 50. So if Matt had 100 and had responsibility for 75, my guess, and you had responsibility for 50, my guess is you'd capture 95% of your production.
Yeah, the numbers, you're probably right, Rob. I mean, I'm going to have to go through this spreadsheet or this business analysis report from the firm. I get confused when it's, if it was just me, you can figure it out pretty easy, but I've got me in here and Matt in here, and then I've got, and so I'm not sure.
Don't you have a pool number? Don't you all work out of the same pool number, and then it splits out to you and to him?
Yeah, we do. And then I recently bought out my partner. I had another partnership with Cindy Johnson, and Cindy is retiring in a couple of years, and so I bought out a 50-50 partnership with her. And so that book of business I bought, it was a small book of, it was maybe, I forgot what was in there, maybe 60 million or so, but it was maybe a dozen households, maybe 15, 20 households. So I'm just buying her out, so that dumps into there as well, but it's not dumping into the team number yet because I haven't got the paperwork so that's not showing up in Matt's numbers. But if I just look at my own breakdown here, let me see here. 1,370,000. My T12 here shows 1,370,000.
Your percentage.
Yeah, my percentage. But when I look on my screen, on the computer, on the UBS system, it shows 1,721,000. So why the heck would that be different? Let's see. It's like 350,000 difference. Okay, well, let's just assume the math is about the same. So either way, if I take accounts north of a million, that's about 78 accounts. I get 78 accounts, and my report here is saying that was about 60% of my business. And then if we add in the next level, the 250 and up, now that represents 86% of our book. So we're getting close to 90% of our book is roughly 200 accounts.
That doesn't make sense to me based on the numbers that you sent me on that email of the 19th. I'm not saying it's not right. It just, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to redo that. I'll look
okay,
at that.
Okay, well, here's
okay.
I thought Cindy Johnson, I think I coached Cindy Johnson.
Yeah, she would have been on, she was probably went through Supernova and then she dropped out.
But she had a partner at the time.
Yeah, she had a partner with Rose Winchittle, and she was also my partner.
Okay.
It's a complicated web I got going here.
I get it. I enjoyed working with both of those ladies.
I had set up many, many years ago, I was getting to the point where I needed some help. So we hired Rose Winchell, and I took her under my wing and created a partnership with her and started giving her accounts. So I basically, most of her book came from me. And then over a period of time, Cindy started giving her accounts. And then one thing led to another. We decided just to create a team with Cindy, Rose, and myself. And so we had this kind of a revenue sharing arrangement going. I would just funnel accounts to Rose that I couldn't handle and take a cut off of it. Then, okay, time went by, blah, blah, blah. And Cindy, it was getting more complicated. Cindy wanted to retire but didn't want to create. And then also I had a partnership with Cindy on some mutual accounts that we developed separately from the Rose partnership. So we built that kind of part of the business up, and then eventually we busted it up. Nothing wrong. It just became Cindy didn't want to. Cindy wanted to call her own shots, and she felt like working with me that I was calling the shots. So we just kind of agreed to split it up. So and Rose, Cindy wanted to retire and wanted to sell out to another woman. And so we just agreed that Cindy Rose partnering with Cindy would work better, and then I in turn partnered with Matt. And so we busted up kind of that part of the business. So that's why there's all these strange relationships out there.
You won't ask me to diagram what you just told me, will you?
No, I don't know that I could actually.
I understand what I get. I understand the big picture. So, but let's go back. You're running a good-sized business, Mike. $362 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big business.
Okay.
You got to get your hands around the statistics. And the questions that I ask you about on that email you sent me on the 19th about the percentage of your revenue from each of those levels, I want to have them, but I know what it's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to say that you can give up a relatively small portion of your practice and only be in charge of 50 or 60 households.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this gets why I ask you the question about are you concerned about what people think about you?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me once people spend way so much energy worrying about what people think about you, not morally, not ethically, but just, you know, what's he, Billy Big Shot or whatever? You can't worry about those things. So if you, and this is, again, this is just you and me, if you could only have responsibility for 50 households and it costs the team, $200,000 in production,
mm-hmm.
could you make that commitment today?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you feel only having, do you think that if you did that, that you would be able to trust your team to take care of the, of Matt's side of the business?
I could, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, again, some have, one of the biggest reasons, one of the main reasons that FAs don't have the success with Supernova that they could have is they still want to have their finger in everything. Not that they like it.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't enjoy the minute details and all the stuff. You just feel like you have to do it because you're the lead dog.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. If you had responsibility, and I'm going to use 60 as an example because the math is easier. If you had 60 households, you could talk to every household once a month, and you'd only have to make 3 calls a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, compare that with what you're doing now. You leave some days dog tired, and you get down to the car wherever you parked, and you say, "Oh my goodness, I forgot to do this, or I didn't do this," or you wake up in the morning, you think, "I didn't get around to this." All that guilt that we associate with that, when with 3 proactive scheduled calls a day, you could talk to 60 clients once a month. Mm-hmm. Do you can you feel the simplicity of that?
Yeah. Yep.
But you didn't. What was the? That was an extended yeah. What was going through your mind as you said yes?
Well, I can, but it's just so foreign to me, Rob, that you I could operate that way. So, you know, it's sort of you kind of get to the point where could that actually happen? You know, I don't know. Is there a Santa Claus?
The answer to that is yes. And do you think that your doctor or your dentist work that way? Being scheduled.
Well, the dentist does. I don't know about the doctor, but
yeah. Well, most of your doctors do also. Especially specialists as opposed to general practitioners. But when your dentist walks in the morning, he doesn't say, who am I going to call today? Who am I going to drill on today?
Right.
His practice manager hands him what he's going to do for the day and shows him to the first examination room, and his day is off.
Right.
So it can be done. It's done in Supernova, and it's done with other professionals that you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a I just want to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it feels uncomfortable is because it's different. Any significant change that you make, Mike, is difficult, because if it weren't difficult, it wouldn't be change.
Right.
It would just be a minor alteration. So that's the first thing that we have to spend some time on. Now, did you bring those lists that I asked you to bring?
I didn't get that till this morning, and so let me look here. What was the list? List of clients.
Mike?
Yeah, I do have it. It's a few months old, but I do have it, yeah.
Mike, I'm going to point out something to you that just to make the case I'm making. On my the letter that the email you responded to me on the 19th,
right.
You just hit a reply to an email that I sent to you back in June.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is important to you. You've made a commitment, a financial and a time commitment. This mm-hmm. is the kind of things that can fall through the cracks
right.
with your clients. You don't hurt my feelings at all. I work for you. You don't work for me. But you can't have that happen to FAs. I worked with a guy. I'm working with a guy who's I finished with just before I talked to you,
mm-hmm.
and he had a physician who asked for money to be sent out 11 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and he had to call. The physician had to call and find out where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not a relationship enhancer.
No,
Those are things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you have too much on your plate, so you have those lists.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay, I want you to go to the revenue list and look at the last person on the list.
The last person on the list. I mean, well, that's okay.
Okay, how much business have they done with you?
Well, these. Got to get rid of the zeros first.
No.
There's plenty.
Why are the zeros there?
There's a whole batch of them. My guess is either zeroed out accounts or something that maybe they could be non-networked accounts or mutual fund accounts that.
But see, Mike, this is what I'm talking about, creating time to look at your practice.
Yeah.
And this isn't work for Mike Carl. This is work for your staff. I mean, as I see your team,
mm-hmm.
Matt's your partner. Verna is a full-time, and then you've got two part-times, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Are you coming out of pocket for those part-times?
No, other than I thought about bringing Lori on full time and paying her out of pocket.
Yeah, well, that might be a really good idea. not a topic for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Carl shouldn't be doing these diagnostics.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in your team should be doing them. And again, the way that works is Verna or Laura, whoever, I need to know who these people are, and if they're not network, if they're not correctly, attached to the rest of the account, let's get them out of here. We don't want them clogging up the system.
Mm-hmm.
This is not work you do. You're the CEO, not the numbers person. So if you go up that list, Mike, how many pages is that list? Or is it pages or is it just one long printout?
51.
Okay, if you went down and knocked out everybody who has done less than $1,000 in business,
mm-hmm.
give me a guess of what percentage of your practice that is.
That probably doesn't register. Yeah, I think 1%.
Well, I mean, just a number of clients, how many does that look like? I mean, what percentage of your clients have given you less than $1,000?
So let's say 10, there's probably 10 accounts, households per page times probably 110.
Okay, if you were coaching me, mm-hmm. what's a general comment you would make to me after seeing you have that many people who give you less than $1,000? You'd say, that's an obvious way, and again, there are going to be some exceptions. Some of those people are householded incorrectly. Some of them may be new relationships, and you've got a stub year of business.
Yeah.
But if you think about a $1,000 relationship, if you're getting paid at 40% after you take out taxes and everything else that you pay, expenses, that person's probably putting $300 in your pocket, maybe.
So if we did, okay, I don't want to digress into details, but just a kind of a thought question here. When we first did the first Supernova thing, we cut several hundred accounts out of the book, believe it or not. So we did actually make a really, really good stab at it and so that's how we got down to 330. These other ones that came back in are all these simple and non-network accounts. But so our numbers around 330, our twisted logic at the time, was 100 for me and 150 for Matt, and so that's really only 250. How the other ones got in there, I don't know. But anyway, where we struggle sometimes, is okay. The Butler account we get. So I met with a Butler account this morning. I had a client in $10 million account. He gave his kids each 250. So I had one of the kids come in this morning. So they have a small account with me, $100,000. But now they dropped in another $250. So now it's $250, $300. But and normally it's not an account I would take. I would give it to Matt or not take it at all. But the reality is now that they're children of my $10 million account, and the client is very, very tight with his children. And so I think, okay, as I said, I can't say no, so I said, okay, I'll do that. I asked them if they would meet with Matt, and they said no. And so instead of saying, I need you to meet with Matt, but either way, that popped up. But then I have, okay, then my neighbor down the street, two houses down, has a $35,000 account with me, four accounts, doesn't do any business. He's president of a large water company, but doesn't have any liquid money. It's all in the business. I keep it because it's my neighbor. And I've got there's just every account has a story. I mean, but they're all, there's got to be at least 100 of them that, I have got every excuse in the book for them. One is he's got a $20,000, $30,000 account. He's the president of the community foundation here in town, which is a big account of ours. So, but the reality is I don't service them. They don't want to be serviced. I can't really. So I just, those are the ones, and we got every, again, I got all kinds of those stories. I just don't know how to handle them or what I.
Okay. I heard everything you said very clearly and understand everything you said.
Yep.
You're giving me two different types of things here. Mm-hmm. Your client, you've got a $10 million relationship, mm-hmm. and he has children.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they have 100 or 250 or 350, none of it excites you.
No.
But they belong to a great client.
Mm-hmm.
So those people become butlers. That means you talk to them four times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want them sitting down at Thanksgiving dinner and Dad says, well, how are things going with you and Mike? And they say, I hadn't heard from Mike in 7 months.
Exactly.
So you treat those people differently. That's why we have the butler category. These are people you have to keep because they're attached to a larger relationship. They count, they don't take the same amount of time as a full-fledged relationship. The fellow who does the community foundation, he's got a $35,000 relationship. What kind of client is the community foundation for you?
I mean, it's a love-hate account.
you love to hate them?
Well, I mean, you like to have, it's a long story. I mean, it's a complicated story, but the community foundation hired an outside consultant to do their investment work, which of course pisses me off. Some firm out of Chicago or out of Michigan to do their consulting work, but you know, in an effort to appease local advisors, because that's where they get their referrals. If the local advisors make referrals to the community foundation, then they generally then place that money back with the advisor. But basically, it's just a servicing fee. You know, they buy $1 million worth of XYZ mutual fund, and we get the trail on it. And we don't do anything with it. We don't manage it. The consultant kind of tells us what to do. We just have it here. So they really don't do any specific business with us. Having said that, though, I had a client that we set up a CRUT with, $2 million. We did the CRUT with them. So the community foundation has the CRUT, but it's a segregated account, so we actually manage it and invest it. And we receive, you know, advisory fees off of that. So, you know, if we come to them with a client who wants to make a charitable gift, they'll place that money back with us. But in terms of any discretionary money that they receive, they don't invest any of that with us. It goes through their consultant.
That CRUT that you mentioned, where is that domiciled?
You mean where the assets held?
Yes.
On the UBS system.
Okay, so that's your relationship. They're just the ultimate beneficiary, right?
Correct, yep.
Okay, I'm your consultant. I'm not your boss.
Yep.
I'd get rid of that account.
Okay.
I understand why people bring in consultants.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that I have to sit there and beg for crumbs.
Mm-hmm.
So my conversation with the head of the community foundation, and because, I mean, this is the St. Cloud Community Foundation?
Right.
Okay. You don't want to be perceived as being belligerent. Is along the lines of my practice, I'm making some refinements to my practice, and I can only have I only want to have X number of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I am not able to provide the level of service to as many people as I have in the past. And I'd relinquish the accounts. I don't know how exactly to say it. You know these people. But, mm-hmm. Just think of what you said, Mike. You've got a love-hate relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not... how much do you think the community foundation gives you in commissions?
The directed accounts.
Yeah, because you domicile the directed accounts, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, they also have the assets that they that the consultant allocates to us. Say, so for example, let's say I bring to them a donor that wants to donate $500,000 to set up a donor advice fund. So that they set up a donor advice fund for $500,000. The foundation in turn will send that money back to us in their account here and invest it in like some mutual fund with us. And then we just receive the servicing fee off or the trailing 12B1 on that.
Yeah, but I mean, how much money is that? How much do you think you're getting from 12B1 fees?
Yeah, that's the number I'm looking for. I would guess. Let me see here. Here it is. So if I take out the Bowerly Crutch, I can't be right. Hold on. Numbers don't add up. I show 37,000, but let's see, 13.
Seems like a lot.
Something isn't adding up here. It's the assets. There's 4.4 million. Okay, so 4.4 million, of which 1,750,000 is the one CRUT. So let's say there's 2.6 million. So the servicing fee would be $6,500. So probably $5,000-$6,000 maybe.
Well, is that worth your time?
No.
I don't know, Mike. You ultimately. Decide, but if you were going to go out and start again, and you could only take 50 households with you,
mm-hmm.
This isn't one of the 50 you would take, is it?
No. Well, there's
if you say that's one we need to keep, and I'm not making that decision for you, I can give you advice. Maybe that's one that that Matt handles. Maybe that's one. Is Verna registered?
Yeah.
Maybe that's one Verna handles. But mm-hmm. That to me sounds like I hate it when they throw you the crumbs back after they because they're so much smarter than they think we are. So here's what I'm drawing from the conversation. It gets back to.
Oh, I see what I did here. It is I was looking at the wrong number. So it's. Yeah, it is $18,397 less. Yeah,
and it's from trails?
It's $5,200.
Where's the rest of it come from?
Well, that's the directed one. I have a client that set up a $2 million CRUT there.
Yeah, but that one's domiciled at UBS, correct?
They're all domiciled at UBS. But
don't you manage that money?
I manage that money, right.
Yeah, well, that's the majority.
Yeah, that's the bulk of it. So it's probably $5,000. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, these are conversations, Mike, that business owners have. The conversation you and I are having now.
Yeah.
You've got two things to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Your time and your knowledge. Mm-hmm. And you can't be giving it away. And you can only service X number of people. So, here's the exercise that I would like for you to. Do, and I'll send you an email later this evening to confirm it. I would like for you to pick 50 people that if you and this was we had this discussion via email earlier. If you could have 50 people, and it might not be the top 50, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to go out and be a sole practitioner one-on-one with Verna, and you took 50 people. Who would it be?
Mm-hmm.
And then tell me how much production that is. And mm-hmm. Here's what I would ask you to do. And I'm trying to get you to think about you've got a support staff there. This is not a Mike Carl job. Is take the list. You told me that you sometimes work at night.
Mm-hmm.
Just take your list home and identify the 50 people that you would take if you were going out by yourself. Now, don't spend a lot of time on it. You may quibble with number you know, 45 through 50, mm-hmm. but you're going to have a pretty good idea. You probably could do that in 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then give that to Vernon to say, just tell me how much production that is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's ideally what I'd like to get you down to, Mike, 50 or 60 people. You would get more referrals. You would enjoy dealing with the people. They would enjoy you. Out of your top 50, how many of them do you think have been with you at 10 years?
All of them.
Mike, they could go anywhere. They could go a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. They've chosen to stay with you
mm-hmm.
because they like and trust you.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're going to get more of your time, they're going to be extremely excited. And then I would ask Matt to identify the 75 after you've taken out 50. Then ask Matt to identify the 75 that he would keep
mm-hmm.
After you've taken your 50.
Okay. So,
do you understand?
Yep, I got it.
So it's one list. Mm-hmm. You're going to look at it, and you're going to say use a yellow highlighter and say, these are my 50. And again, we can always modify this, but we got to see what we're dealing with here. And then give the list to Matt and give him a different color highlighter and say, Matt, you identify 75 that you think are the next most important 75. All right? My guess is you're probably going to be looking at least 90% of your production.
Okay.
So instead of going from the bottom up, looking at these zero balance accounts, so on, let's go from the top down and see how much of your practice you can keep, how much of your production you can keep with 125 households.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, Mike, the right answer is you have 55 and Matt has 80. We got to have a starting point with good statistics so mm-hmm. you can start making decisions.
Yeah.
How old are you?
56.
How long are you going to work?
That's a good question. I don't have a time. I guess I don't have a timeline on it. But my thought was, at least initially, you know, that I would in 5 years, 2018. There's some additional deferred comp, retention kinds of things that kick in here at the firm that I become vested in. So in my head, I'm thinking I really probably wouldn't change anything until then.
Okay.
Then, you know, then it's kind of, well, I don't know. I don't know if I would retire or if I would just keep doing what I'm doing. I guess I hadn't thought much about that yet.
Well, do you enjoy what you do? I mean, there are parts of your job that you really, really like, correct?
Yeah, there's days I do like it, right.
And there are probably days that you say, 2018 can't get here quick enough. I'm worn out, I'm tired, I'm cranky, I kick the dog when I go home. So here's what's going to happen. I've seen this.
Okay.
If you will bring the size of your practice down and focus on your best clients, you're going to enjoy it more. You're going to be more relaxed. You're going to be more rested. And you're going to work longer because you're having more fun. And I can't guarantee that, but I saw a guy that worked for me at Merrill in Nashville. He retired at LOS 57.
Mm-hmm.
And his last 5 years, he just kind of slid over into the co-pilot seat and talked to his buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Who were clients. Now, in reality, that's probably what he'd been doing for a long time anyway, but he didn't have the guilt of not getting to the rest of his practice.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I want you to I'll follow this up with an email this evening, but I want you to ID the production for your simple plans.
Okay.
I want you to get that list of high to low by production. And I want you to identify the 50 people that you would keep if you were starting on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to give that list to Matt and say, Matt, pick the next 75. And if his first comment is, wait, we can't give all the rest away. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about getting a handle around our practice. So if you have that, then I think we have a good basis to move on next week.
Do you think, Rob? Okay, so three questions. One, I keep thinking, you know, one solution is just to hire more help. Is that a twisted thinking, or?
You mean, are you talking about more sales support?
Bring on another FA to handle.
It might be, Mike, but it's one of the most important things that an FA can do. A great team functions. You get, you know, two people, you get the same. It's like you got three people because it goes so smoothly. You get the wrong person in there, and it gums up the works.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is maybe, but okay. What you want to bring in is somebody who is really good. You don't want to bring in somebody who hasn't been getting it done by themselves,
right?
Because if they haven't been getting it done by themselves, they probably lack some of the skills. Not that they're bad people, but they probably lack some of the skills that you would want that you need in order to be additive to your practice.
Or there's a guy in town, gentleman in town that I compete with, who's a large producer. He bought a large book from another guy who'd been in business in town here probably 40 years or so, maybe even longer, 40 or 50. He bought a big book, and he's, you know, respectfully kept the book and grown it more. So he's probably running over $1 billion in assets now. And he's a Barron's 1000 guy, which pisses me off because I lost the $10 million RFP to him last year. I worked really, really, really hard on that proposal, and there were seven people competing for the business. It got down to two, him and me, in the end, it was a 4-3 vote on the board to go with him. And, you know, part of it was the way it was marketed. It was, he was a Barron's 1000 advisor. And once you get on one list, you're on everybody's list. So then you're on the top Minnesota advisor list, and then you're on the Southern list. And so they thought, well, he must be good, so we're going to go with that. And so, you know, I lost a good chunk of, you know, but that was fun. But, of course, it hurt to lose. But he operates, I think, I could be wrong, I don't know, on the theory of never giving any accounts away. He just hires FAs and pays them, you know, $100,000 a year, and you work this block of business. And I suppose that's another route to go. I don't know.
It is another route to go. The problem with that is that the people who service his best clients are also burdened with servicing those small clients. And it gums up the works.
Right.
But maybe it is the marketing. I mean, I'm looking at your biography, Mike. I mean, what I'm reading here, I don't know what NABCAP stands for, but it says Top Wealth Advisor Award, Minneapolis, St. Paul Journal.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong. The Barron, it's nice to have that Barron's 1000,
mm-hmm.
but that wasn't the only thing that went into it. So I don't know.
I was just asking the question if that makes sense.
We're getting ahead of the wave okay. here. I want to stick with. Let's stick with what.
Okay.
Let's look at it from the perspective of the team right now, and then we're better able to have conversations like that.
Okay.
What firm is that person with that you just talked about?
It's RBC.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'll send you the homework, but you understand where we're going.
Yep. I think it's this is all good. I think probably there's a little fear. You know, the fear is I want to get to. You know, you don't have anything to complain about, and I'm sure you hear all these conversations all day long from all kinds of people. and I'm trying to get to the next level of production, but it is that, so part of it is the fear of not getting there. If I do this, I'm not going to get there. I won't get to the Chairman's Council at UBS or the Pinnacle Council or whatever it is, so part of it is that, or your, whatever it is, Barron's 1000 acclimation or whatever. But then on the flip side, I just lose sleep over waking up. It's like, oh, I haven't talked to this person. No, it's a big account. I haven't talked to them. And I try to do the 5 calls a day, but they're not scheduled calls. I only have a few that I got scheduled. But again, it's just a function of freeing up the time to be able to do it. So part of it is I can always find something else to do. And I think the other part of it, and I can visit with you on it later, is trying to simplify our investment solution platform. And we've been trying to work on that too, to simplify and streamline the practice. Our investment solutions are complicated, but they're getting better. But I think that's also making it complicated to streamline the practice, because you're spending as much time managing the money as you are managing the relationship. So there's ways to simplify that, but that's probably another discussion too.
It is. It's a good discussion to have. You want to be able to say to people, and this is a sample brand, I have a planning-driven practice. I have a concierge practice for a limited number of people. It's planning-driven. I have a formal investment process. That doesn't mean everybody gets the same portfolio. It's everybody goes through the same process, and it's all wrapped by unparalleled service. So having a formal investment process, which is what I think you're talking about,
right,
makes all the sense in the world. When you say wake up at night, Mike, because I didn't call this person, I didn't call that person, that's a drain. That's like leaving the lights on in your car in the parking lot. It just drains your battery.
Yep.
That's why if you can let go and get down to 50 or 60 relationships for whom you have primary responsibility, I think you won't be waking up like that anymore. The reason I asked you that first question was, if you only did $500,000 the rest of your life, would you be okay? Mm-hmm. So you can think through this. If I go through this and I lose half my business or two-thirds of my business, I'm still going to be okay. Not where you want to be, but you're not encumbered by having to try to keep all these people in order to make the balance sheet work out or the income, whatever. So just let's take deliberate smaller steps.
Okay.
And if you can have that information for me next week, then have Matt on the phone also. He emailed me and said he thought it was on Tuesdays, and he had a conflict. But if you all can be on the phone and if Vern is on the phone, I think we can get our handle around this, and at least you'll have the information to make a good decision.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, excellent. Okay, thanks.
All right, Mike, enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Bye.
Good day.
This is obviously Mike Carl. Please send this email or the transcript only to him. I'll confirm that on email, but this one just goes to Mike Carl.